This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Today I'm interviewing Professor Jim Drake, who works at the University of Maryland and is currently on sabbatical at the University of California, Berkeley. Welcome to the Jodcast.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So you're giving a seminar today, and it's on a very interesting topic, which is the Voyager spacecraft and where it is now in the solar system. So to start with, can you tell us about what the Voyagers 1 and 2 are and where they are at the moment?
Okay, so the Voyager spacecraft are heading away from the sun at around 20 kilometers per second. The Voyager 1 is at in the northern latitudes, about 35 degrees north. I'm not going to be able to tell you off the top of my head the exact distance, but it's around 120 to 130 AU, and AU is the distance from the sun to the Earth.
So it's several times further than Neptune, even from the sun.
Oh, yeah, it's quite a bit further than Neptune from the sun.
Well, in fact, Voyager 2 did a flyby of Neptune in 1989, so it's very well beyond Neptune at this point.
Yes, it's way beyond all the planets now.
I guess that's how we remember the Voyager probes, as being the ones, or at least, as you said, Voyager 2, that took some of the great pictures of the outer planets of the solar system.
If you listen to Ed Stone give a talk on the entire history of the Voyagers and their discoveries, it's very remarkable. You know, you look at all these measurements of volcanic activity on some of the various moons, and none of that was known before Voyager went out there. So it's, the history of discovery is remarkable.
So the wonderful thing about Voyagers 1 and 2 now is that they are still transmitting data back to Earth and telling us a little bit about their environment, and that's really what you were telling us about today. So can you give us a picture of what it was that you're actually studying?
Okay. The first thing I want to say is that the Voyagers, so the sun has a realm of influence in which the particles, plasma particles from the sun, are shooting out from the sun. There's a certain spatial domain in which those particles are around, and then there's a boundary, and beyond that boundary then you don't find any particles from the sun, and all those particles on the outside of that boundary are from the interstellar medium. Now, one of the really lucky things about Voyager is that the so-called nose of the heliosphere, which is the domain of the sun, is out where the Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 spacecraft are. And that's just pure luck, because when the Voyagers were launched in the 1970s, we had no idea about how the plasma from the interstellar medium was flowing. And the nose of the heliosphere is right where the flow from the interstellar medium is coming in and hitting the heliosphere. And it just so happens by luck that both of the Voyagers are pointed out pretty much in the direction. So we were very lucky, so what we're trying to do is figure out where that boundary is between the domain of the sun and the domain of the interstellar medium, and try to look at what happens to the energetic particles, for example, produced in the heliosphere when they cross that boundary. And what happens to the galactic cosmic rays, which are in the interstellar medium, when we cross that boundary, and in fact have the first direct measurements of the full galactic cosmic ray spectrum outside the heliosphere, which has never been measured before and is now being measured for the first time.
So to go to a couple of the different bits of terminology there, our solar system then is moving through this interstellar medium, all the particles and the gas between the stars, and we're moving through it at a certain velocity, and that's why the heliosheath has a sort of teardrop shape rather than just being a sphere.
Right, so the heliosphere has a teardrop shape with a nose, and so the nose point is the distance where this boundary is closest to the sun. So whether you say the sun is moving through the interstellar medium or the interstellar medium is moving in towards the sun, it really doesn't matter. The one thing we know is that the local interstellar medium is coming at us at around 20 kilometers per second.
And it's as you explained in the talk, you called it a miracle that the Voyagers happened to be heading right towards the nose, and so they didn't have to travel for many, many decades. Well,
right.
just 4 decades to get through it.
Yeah, so the heliopause, which is this boundary that we're talking about, is much closer to the sun on the nose. If the Voyagers were going towards the tail, the backside of the heliosphere, then the Voyagers would never intersect that boundary during their lifetime. The Voyager spacecraft instruments are powered by a radioactive decay process, and the power from that device is going down with time. And the instruments on the spacecraft will only be able to be run perhaps 2024 or 2025. At that point, in fact, slightly before that point, they're going to be gradually shutting down the instruments to try to save power. And then by that time, all the instruments will be turned off, and that'll be it, and the Voyager won't be taking any more data. But, you know, so if the Voyagers had been going towards the tail of the heliosphere, there's we never would have been able to see this boundary. So, and it was pure luck, just by chance, that they happened to be pointing right towards the nose of the heliosphere. So somebody's got good luck on that program.
And you mentioned cosmic rays, and you also mentioned the domain of the sun. So that gives a couple of clues as to what the Voyagers actually measure. So what instruments do you have access to the data from?
Well, personally, I don't have access to it, although I suppose anybody in principle could log onto the Voyager website and sort of look at what's going on. But anyhow, the Voyagers are measuring the magnetic field directions. They have a bunch of energetic particle instruments that can measure different ranges of energy of particles and different species. And then Voyager 1 used to have an instrument to measure the local plasma density. That's the number of charged particles per unit volume. But that broke quite a long time ago. And Voyager 2 still has a plasma instrument, which can measure the density, which is good. And the reason this is an important issue is because one of the defining signatures of the heliopause is that the plasma density should jump by about a factor of 30 as you cross the heliopause. And so with Voyager 1, when we're trying to decide, did we or didn't we cross the heliopause, we did not have that direct density measurement. And that was a complicating factor in terms of deciding, have we or have we not crossed outside the heliosphere. What Voyager 1 does have is an instrument that measures waves. Fortunately, there's a particular type of wave called a plasma wave whose frequency is controlled by the plasma density alone. And so if we measure waves of a certain frequency, then we can immediately tell, aha, now we know the density. So I guess I haven't discussed all of these issues now about whether Voyagers cross the heliopause. Should we start talking about that now?
Yeah, I guess we should, because listeners might remember that there's been more than one news story at different times saying, oh, Voyager 1 has just left the solar system, which is a slightly glib way of putting it, or Voyager 1 has crossed the heliopause. And you're explaining today that the data in some ways make it slightly less of a simple picture than we might have thought before. So there seem to be the key things of the plasma density and the number of these cosmic rays, these particles that are arriving, and also the magnetic field. So what did those data tell you?
Okay, so let me go through what Voyager measured and what's been confusing about whether Voyager has crossed the heliopause. So the Voyager's measuring energetic particles, in particular both electrons and various ion species. And there are certain energetic ions that are produced in the heliosphere. And so you can imagine then if we go from the heliosphere to outside, we should be seeing a drop in the intensity of those particles. In particular, there's a certain group of particles known as anomalous cosmic rays, which have energies of 10 to 100 million electron volts per nucleon,
So they're very energetic compared
they're very
to
energetic
any
particles.
Particle that you might normally find sort of flying around a room or something.
Right. So these are very energetic particles. And we know that those anomalous cosmic rays are produced in the heliosphere for reasons which I'm not going to go into right now. But those are a very good signature. So if you see a drop in those particles, then you're pretty sure that you've gone outside the heliosphere. In the meantime, there's other classes of particles like the so-called galactic cosmic rays, which are higher energy. And Voyager also measures those, and I believe they measure up to 200 MeV per nucleon or something like that. I'm not sure of the exact number. But if you cross the heliopause, what you expect to see is an abrupt increase in the numbers of those galactic cosmic rays. And okay, so the story then is what did Voyager see back in 2012? What Voyager saw was a series of dropouts in the anomalous cosmic rays. So what happened was they were measuring anomalous cosmic rays at some intensity. Suddenly there was a sharp drop, and that lasted for a few days, and then the number density rose back up. And then so it stayed at some intensity level, and then it dropped out again. And then it came back up again. And finally it dropped out, and basically all of the particles seen that are produced in the heliosphere basically went to essentially zero. And so when the Voyager team first started looking at the data, I'm sure everybody thought, without any question, that Voyager had left the heliosphere. Because, I mean, that's the signature. You know, you've just suddenly stopped measuring all of the particles which you're very sure are produced within the heliosphere. And at the same time, meanwhile, by the way, as the anomalous cosmic rays which are produced in the heliosphere drop out, at the same time, the galactic cosmic ray intensity jumped up. Uh-huh. And so that's telling you, yes, we just went into the interstellar medium, and so now we're seeing more galactic cosmic rays. And that's because the magnetic field around the inside the heliosphere acts as a barrier, and it sort of helps keep out the galactic cosmic rays. And so that all looked perfect. You know, the Voyager had left the heliosphere. There's some confusion. So, for example, I said there were several dropouts. Why were there several dropouts? That remained to be answered. But still, the idea that we had left the heliosphere seemed pretty clear. Okay, and then the controversy, and then the real questions started arising, because the direction of the solar magnetic field is in the east-west direction. It's so-called azimuthal direction in the heliosphere.
So it's sort of going towards and away from the equator of the
pointing, it's staying in the equatorial direction. So it's, if you look at the equatorial plane, the magnetic field from the sun is a spiral. It sort of tries to stay in that plane. So it's going east-west, for example, if you're looking at the whole heliosphere. Okay, so that's the direction of the solar magnetic field, and that's the so-called Parker spiral. Eugene Parker is the one who made the prediction for what that magnetic field would look like. But on the other hand, the interstellar medium has no knowledge of the direction of the magnetic field from the sun. And there's a lot of estimates for the direction of that interstellar magnetic field based on other observations. Even before the Voyager crossed, or we think crossed, into the interstellar medium, people were pretty sure that they knew both the magnitude and the direction of the interstellar field. And that interstellar field has an angle of maybe 60 degrees with respect to the equatorial plane. So, yes, I'm sorry.
I was going to ask, what observations did people use to actually figure out the direction of the interstellar radiation field in our local environment?
You mean the interstellar magnetic field, you mean?
Yeah, the interstellar magnetic.
Yeah, so, okay, let me just say that I'm not the expert on this topic. So there's been quite a few different measurements. One is that I'm most familiar with is that there is this thing called the termination shock. The particles coming out from the sun are moving supersonically. That means they're moving faster than the compressible wave speed or the sound speed in the medium. It's supersonic. At some point, that supersonic flow becomes subsonic at what's called the termination shock. It's a shock wave. From supersonic flow to subsonic flow. If the sun was totally isolated by itself, with no interstellar medium giving some direction, then that would be a spherical termination shock. It would be a perfect sphere.
And it's within the heliosphere.
Yeah, that shock is within the heliosphere. But what they saw when they, so that, you know, they, the other thing that was great about the Voyagers is that there's two of them. And they're at different latitudes. So the Voyager 1 is in the north, and the Voyager 2 is in the south. And what they measured was a difference in the location, the radial distance, to the termination shock. And in particular, the termination shock is closer in the direction of Voyager 2 than it is for Voyager 1. And for that reason, they could tell that there was that helped constrain the direction of the magnetic field in the interstellar medium, because that said that the magnetic pressure in the southern hemisphere had to be higher than the northern hemisphere, and that's why the termination shock was pushed in. So that's one of the measurements I'm most familiar with. But there's a lot of other measurements, and other people are more qualified than I am to discuss that. But anyhow, that's just an example of a measurement that tells you, that helped tell us something about the direction of the magnetic field and its strength. Okay, so where were we? So the bottom line is that in the heliosphere, the magnetic field is primarily going in the azimuthal direction, which is the east-west direction. And in their stellar medium, the magnetic field is 0.45 or so nanotesla. And it has a pretty steep angle, 60 degrees, with respect to the plane of the solar system, to the equatorial plane of the solar system. Okay, so what does that mean? That means as you cross the heliopause, what everybody thought was that the magnetic field would rotate from east-west to a much stronger north-south component. And that was one of the key signatures that everybody thought was going to signify that we crossed outside the heliosphere. Okay, so we've discussed these dropouts that occurred in the anomalous cosmic rays, indicating to many people that Voyager had crossed out. And the surprise was that the magnetic field did not rotate as expected. So the consequence of that was that the Voyager team decided that, well, the Voyager had not crossed into the interstellar medium yet because they didn't see the magnetic field rotation. So there was a series of papers published in Science magazine, I think it was in June of 2013, reporting the dropouts in these anomalous cosmic rays and the increase in the galactic cosmic rays, but concluding that there was some channel which was allowing these things to move across the heliopause, but Voyager was still within the heliosphere. Okay, so meanwhile, there had been an intense modeling effort to do computer simulations of the global structure of the heliosphere. And there's a number of groups who were working on this, and so they were basically taking the set of the so-called magnetohydrodynamic equations and looking at the structure of the magnetic field coming out from the sun, the temperature and the density of the plasma coming out from the sun, and looking at how that interacts with the interstellar magnetic field and the interstellar plasma.
And these are pretty tough equations to solve.
Yeah, it's very massive computer simulations running on thousands of processors on some of the largest computers we have. Professor Mirav Ofer and our group at Maryland, including me and one of my colleagues, Mark Swistak, were collaborating on this, trying to understand this global structure. And Dr. Ofer was finding, you know, as soon as the the observations came out of that the magnetic field had not rotated, Professor Ofer started looking in more detail at her simulations and discovered, to our surprise, that in fact the magnetic field that she measured in her simulations also did not sharply rotate at the heliopause. Now, in her simulations, we knew where the heliopause was because we saw the sharp increase in the density that we knew had to happen at the heliopause. So there was no question in the simulation where the heliopause was. And lo and behold, the magnetic field did not sharply rotate. But in fact, it rotated much more gradually over a long distance, going out outside the heliopause, which is exactly what the Voyager was sort of seeing. It was seeing a slow change in the rotation angle, but not a sharp one. In light of that, we decided that there didn't have to be a sharp rotation of the magnetic field at the heliopause, and that wasn't the key signature. The drop in the anomalous cosmic rays as seen by the Voyagers, we decided that that might be a more accurate signature of the heliopause. However, there was still an issue, and that was, number one, not only did the magnetic field not rotate sharply, it didn't hardly rotate it at all when those particles, the number of the anomalous cosmic rays dropped. And number two, there were all these up and down dropouts of these anomalous cosmic rays. How could we explain that?
So something's happening.
Something's happening. Something seems to be happening at the boundary, and can we understand that? So there's this process called magnetic reconnection. If you have, for example, magnetic fields which are pointing in two adjacent regions are pointing in opposite directions, then what can happen is that magnetic field can cross-connect, basically. In other words, the magnetic field on one side can cross-link with the magnetic field on the other side, and that turns out to release magnetic energy, and that produces a series of magnetic loops, which we call magnetic islands. So what we decided to do was to do a computer simulation about how those magnetic islands might form at the heliopause, with the idea that at the heliopause, if you got these magnetic islands, then, and those magnetic islands, by the way, would allow plasma to cross that boundary much more easily than if it was a sharp, pristine boundary. And so we set out to do a set of simulations of that. In our simulation, we found that there were a bunch of these magnetic islands stringing along like beads at the heliopause.
And those would explain the dropouts and the
right. And so the mixing of the plasma between the interstellar medium and the heliosheath, which is inside the heliosphere, the mixing that would occur would explain the dropouts as seen by the Voyager spacecraft. We did those simulations, and then we said, okay, can we look at the Voyager data and see if we can figure out what type of magnetic structure would actually cause those dropouts? And so we constructed a cartoon based on what we knew about our simulations, and that cartoon had a set of three magnetic islands, these loops of magnetic field, and the mixing across the heliopause produced by those islands could explain then the series of dropouts which the Voyager 1 spacecraft had seen. And based on those dropouts, and then based on what the direction of the magnetic field was in our simulation, so, yeah, we went back and we looked at the Voyager data, and we concluded that on day 209 of 2012, that the Voyager spacecraft had crossed the heliopause. And it was actually subsequent to that that the Voyager saw the dropouts and all these anomalous cosmic rays. Uh-huh. And so we published a paper then in I guess it was August of 2013, saying that. So, you know, we felt we were sticking our necks out on this issue because we were contradicting what the Voyager team members had concluded. And let me just say that the interaction between the Voyager team and us has been really good. And in fact, when I decided that Ed Stone, who's the head of the Voyager team, was actually giving a seminar in Bern, Switzerland, showing the Voyager magnetic data. And I was, you know, we had done these simulations, and Ed was giving this seminar, and it suddenly dawned on me, on looking at that data and thinking about what we'd seen in our simulation, that Voyager had actually made the crossing. And so that interaction, you know, was the trigger that led us to conclude that the Voyager had actually left the heliosphere. So what happened then was that the Voyager spacecraft had measured a series of wave events. So recall what I had said was that the Voyager 1 spacecraft can't measure the density directly, but they do have a wave instrument. And if they measure waves with that instrument, they can immediately tell what the local density is, because the wave frequency is directly linked to what that density is. And so what happened is the Voyager 1 spacecraft measured a series of discrete wave events in late 2012. And from the frequency of those waves that they measured, they deduced that Voyager was in a region of much higher plasma density, and therefore they had to be in the interstellar medium. Don Gurnett, who is the lead of that wave measurement instrument, and some of the other Voyager team members, published a paper in September of 2013, in which they now said that yes, Voyager was in the interstellar medium.
Okay, and that'll be why the popular media story kind of resurfaced.
Right. So yeah. So I mean, there was a whole series of media interest in this. First, the June Voyager papers, and then we published our August paper. There was a lot of interest because, you know, after all, here was these theorists claiming to contradict the Voyager team members. And then in September, the new Voyager papers, in which the Voyager team concluded that, yes, they were outside the heliosphere. Yeah, we had a whole series of peaks in media interest on this whole topic. And of course, you know, I think everybody concluded when the September issue came out, and the Voyager team really, at that point, really had solid evidence that Voyager had crossed out. You know, that was considered a historic moment because this was our first manned spacecraft to leave the solar system, basically.
Yeah. Wow.
Or at least to leave the part of the solar system influenced by the sun's solar winds, because there's
right.
still things like the Oort cloud, which I think extend much further beyond this boundary. This
yeah.
may be like a
yeah.
Discussion.
So the historic crossing then is for when the spacecraft first left the region in which the particles and magnetic fields are produced by the sun, and that's the heliopause, and so this was the Voyager 1 spacecraft leaving the domain dominated by the sun.
And as time goes on, assuming we've got 10 years of data to come from the voyages, can we expect to see the direction of the magnetic field slowly changing,
right.
rotating?
Yeah, so at least this is the theoretical prediction that Professor Ofer made from her simulations, and that was that there would be a gradual rotation in the direction of the interstellar field over the next few years. Now, what the Voyager had been seeing is a start of that gradual rotation, although weirdly enough, in the last set of data that we've seen, it did not seem like that angle was increasing as much as we might have thought. But, you know, there's still another roughly 10 years of data to come. And so our expectation is that we will continue to see the rotation in the magnetic field taking place. In the meantime, there's a lot of other great stuff. For example, the Voyager's now outside the heliosphere, at least we think it is. At least some of us think it is. Not everybody's in agreement, by the way. And so they're measuring directly the galactic cosmic ray spectrum, which is, of course, of great interest. I mean, previously we've been measuring the galactic cosmic ray spectrum both in satellites around the Earth and by the Voyager spacecraft, but you know, the magnetic field produced by the Sun is somewhat of a shield, and so not all the galactic cosmic rays could get inside the heliosphere. So Voyager is now out, presumably outside, and is directly measuring the galactic cosmic ray spectrum, which is of great interest to many people.
I think that probably leads on to what was going to be my last question, actually, which is if in the fairly far future human beings in a spacecraft were to cross the heliopause, I mean, would they be in greater danger from these cosmic rays than they are within it?
This is one of those important issues. It's not only if we were leaving the heliosphere. The whole issue of manned flight to Mars, for example, you know, the issue protecting a human being from either the galactic cosmic rays or from a very large flare from the Sun, which also produces very energetic particles. That's an important topic which, frankly, needs a lot more discussion, because it's very hard to shield somebody in space from these energetic particles. I think we're much further from even thinking about having human beings travel outside the heliosphere. Mm-hmm. So the most immediate question is, I think, what's the issue with regard to protecting astronauts in going to Mars, which is really a topic which needs a lot of thought.
These cosmic rays behave more or less like particles from radioactive decay on Earth. So it's a severe solar flare or a really heavy dose of galactic cosmic rays could affect a human body in much the same way as standing next to a large pile of uranium, for example.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes me think of the phrase known unknowns and unknown unknowns, because the more your unknown things at least can be predicted and quantified in some way, the better able you are to predict what the risk really would be to astronauts going to Mars. Otherwise, it's hard to even say what are their chances, what are the chances that something's going to go terribly wrong.
Yeah. I think, you know, we have fairly good models now for understanding, for example, the solar wind and its magnetic field have an influence on the intensity of the galactic cosmic rays. And our models for that are pretty decent. What has a lot more uncertainty is what's the probability or what's the likelihood of a very large solar flare mm-hmm. producing a coronal mass ejection, and the shock wave in front of the coronal mass ejection is a very efficient producer of energetic particles, and it's that type of thing which has the greatest uncertainty, because we just don't have a predictive capability of when you'll get a very large flare and associated coronal mass ejection. This is a topic which people are working hard on, but our predictive capability, if we see a flare and CME coming from the Sun, we have pretty good capability of figuring out whether it's going to hit the Earth and that sort of thing, but we certainly don't have very good ways of predicting when those events will take place. Mm-hmm. And that brings a lot of uncertainty to the safety of astronauts trying to go to Mars.
So there could be more danger coming from the Sun than coming from outside.
I think the danger from what's going from the Sun is much more uncertain than the issue about galactic cosmic rays.
Wow, that's really fascinating. And also, I suppose, for people studying cosmic rays, then maybe Voyager's measurements will, as you say, they give a pure measurement of the galactic cosmic rays. So maybe it will help us to understand a bit more about where these mysterious particles come from as well.
Yeah. Right.
Excellent. Well, that's really, it's quite inspiring, really, Voyager, I think. I mean, it's set off before I was born.
It was after I was born.
But not that long after.
No, but I did grow up with Voyager discoveries periodically appearing on the news.
And it was great that they were made to last and that they're still doing science and helping us
to do
science.
So, I mean, that's one of the great things about these spacecraft. It's actually, you know, the idea that these spacecraft out in a very hostile environment with energetic particles all over the place are still functioning. There must have been some extremely good engineers who were doing this. Let me say personally that I was actually born before the Voyagers were launched. I can remember reading about all the discussion of, you know, putting these, I guess, these gold plates in there with information about human beings and this and that.
For people born after 1990, these gold plates were records, or called records.
Yeah, they were called records. Are they really records? I don't know what they actually are.
I thought CDs, actually.
Oh, okay.
Well, I may be wrong about that. Anyway, they were carrying information that...
Yeah, they had some songs and things, I think, on them. Something like that. I don't know all the details, but
they had Chuck Berry.
Did they?
But it's going to be a while before they're anywhere near any other stars, isn't it?
I'm not sure whether my recollection is right, but I think the Voyager is going to come within, I've forgotten whether it's 40 light years or something like that of another star. But it's quite a ways off, and it's not really very close.
But what, you're going to say something about the actual disks, and
it's certainly symbolic to send these things out. Especially if the Voyager is silent, in the sense of not sending out radio signals or something like that. The idea that somebody is actually going to find these things and look at those disks is, one could hardly argue the probability is very high for that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as a symbolism for us sending these things out, you know, I think it's a valuable thing to try to do. And in fact, try to imagine what it is you would actually send out. You know, it's going back now to when the Voyagers were being designed. What would you want to put on these disks? What's important to you? I think just the process of going through that type of thinking, mm-hmm. and getting people to talk about it and lay it out and do it, I think is a valuable thing for humanity to do, irrespective of whether we actually think somebody's actually going to find this thing.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very, very much for the colloquium and the interview.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.